Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
Here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
You like my accent and intonation there? I just had to throw in a little extra Shakespeareanism.
Just out of curiosity, is your headphones sound as bad as mine do?
Oh, today? Yes.
Okay, just one.
Quite horrible. It's either that or our voices, but it's probably our voices.
It's probably our voices. You're probably right.
We tend to blame the technology around here for all of our problems, but it's generally us.
Well, I think this is somewhat of a record, I think, for how badly we sound through our headphones. We can barely understand ourselves, but that's normal. That's the way we normally. So I'm going to try a couple of things here and see if that works any better. Nope, it has no effect whatsoever. Okay. Well, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is the Personal Wealth Coach.
Was that better?
Suddenly I could hear nothing, which means that I'm probably not doing anything. But we are, in fact, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Well, actually, we aren't. The Personal Wealth Coach is, which is very confusing because we're the two advising principals of the Personal Wealth Coach. But the Personal Wealth Coach is a greater entity. So, we do this for a living, and collectively we've been at it for about 400 years. Is that that's not completely correct?
I always like it when people say, collectively, we've been doing this, as if you can stack lifetimes like that.
I think you can. I think that's the whole issue, is that, you know, whatever. But at any rate,
if you think of all the time that we spent being bored and you add that to the time that we've spent not being bored, you have our lifetimes.
I'm going to have to think about that for a little bit. Anyway, one or the other of us has been doing this since a really long time ago, like, would you believe, 1982 or 83. And
I've been doing it since 91, so it's got to be you that's the 82.
Well, I was 83. Trying to not let people know that I was really, really ancient, but that's all right.
Yeah, you can't escape that. You have a white beard, and all of our listeners can tell immediately that you have a white beard.
They can?
Yes. It's the way they tell
Does
us apart.
Does it sound different?
I'm wearing plaid, you're wearing plain, you have a white beard, I have a dark beard, though I'm getting some salt in my pepper.
Oh, well, we're both bald.
That just confuses the listeners. Now they're not going to know who's.
Well, but
who.
You're more bald than I am.
That's true.
But you're
more
but
bald.
You're younger.
Yes.
Which is a little bit confusing, even to me.
That I'm younger.
That you're younger but more bald.
Hmm. This sounds sort of like the questions on the SAT.
More like the previous show, presentation where Ed Laughlin was discussing
Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, Gilligan's Island.
It's an important.
Well, yeah, it's an absolutely
it's a cultural reference,
economic event, and well, if you think about it, Gilligan's Island just carried over to the hit series Lost.
Right.
That really was Gilligan's Island.
Right.
That they were
just,
on.
They showed up, and yeah, that's
which is
that's
why it. They couldn't get off of it. You see, and they could build radios and
right, just like Lost. Yeah, right. There's less violence though.
And that's why they
just as many visitors to the island, though. I mean, right. You just have guest stars every week,
right? And that island is obviously where the quote reality TV shows.
Just
were.
To take this a step further, I've figured out that the way that people were getting on and off Gilligan's Island was Flipper, because while the professor could make washing machines out of coconuts and radios out of palm trees, he could not fix his boat. And thus, Flipper is the one that was getting all the guest stars on and off the island. It's probably what was happening for Lost as well.
That makes actually perfectly good sense to me, so that's perfectly right.
We've got a disclosure to give.
Oh, we do, yes. And I said...
You gave some of it.
Yeah, well, the Personal Wealth Coach is obviously, well, maybe not to you, but to us, obviously a radio program. It's the name of a radio program that we do here every Saturday morning. This Saturday morning happening to be January 18th. 2014, and it also, not coincidentally, is the name of an investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas, that is registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Somebody asked me a while back why I make a big deal of the fact that we're registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Well, actually,
it's more like kind of resting on our laurels there.
Yeah, it's a
nice puff up the chest moment.
For whatever it's worth, if an investment advisor has less than $100 million under management, they register with their local state and or states. However, if an investment advisory firm has $100 million or more under management, active management, then they get to register with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. And the other side of it is, if you have a complaint, that's who to call.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why we say that, because they're the regulatory authority.
Yes.
They have not approved us. We just registered through them. That's something important.
Right. Well,
but they're the people
know.
That would come down with both feet on us if we said some really stupid things.
But they did register us.
They did. We registered with them.
Yes, and they accepted our registration.
Right. Yes, they did.
They neither approved nor disapproved.
It's kind of like when you go to a hotel to spend the night and you register at the hotel.
They definitely approve.
True. And the SEC approves our well, but that's the only approval we get from them.
Okay. It was a nice approval. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, that's where I go for approval these days. I just go to the grocery store and swipe my card. You are approved. Ah, yes.
Well, anyway, if you would like to give us a call, minus years of... We did good ones along the way, too, and we try to capitalize on the good ones. But I tell a lot of people that probably the biggest strength we have is we have either made or seen made so many mistakes, probably 90% of success at this point. And I'm serious. I mean, it's really successful driving is mainly not having an accident. Successful flying is not crashing the airplane. And successful investing, very frankly,
destroying your portfolio.
Right, is not annihilating your portfolio by doing something silly. We have a couple of hundred clients, and I routinely tell them the ones that have been with us for a long period of time who are relatively successful, and I often compliment them, and they say, "Oh, we didn't do anything," and I said, "Precisely," and it worked out magnificently, didn't it? Matter of fact, I talked to somebody last week that I gave some advice to that I'd totally forgotten about. Years, and I mean like 20 years, some advice to the wife, a customer at the time, because it was a stockbroker and ESP, and I gave her some advice, which we don't give individual advice. But she 20-some years later, she is retiring from the federal government, and she has done very well, and she thanked me so sincerely for that advice. I totally forgot that I gave her that advice. Factually, I probably would have changed it along the way. But the issue is, because she stuck to some, what I will say for lack of better terms, is some mediocre advice that I gave 20 years ago, she's done very well. And that should tell you, if you want to know the secret about successing in the being successful in the market.
Consistency.
Is consistently doing something that's pretty good. And the people who try to do phenomenally well generally wind up in the position that I've got an article in here about SAC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where the doctor who was giving the insider information to the hedge fund SAC,
Stephen Cohen.
He didn't actually give it directly to Stephen Cohen. He gave it to a manager who worked for Stephen Cohen.
Yes.
Stephen Cohen's really smart.
Yes, he didn't even know it was going on. Of course not.
But and so there's a pretty high probability that the investment manager trader. Who was working for Stephen Cohen will get to have free room and board for an extended period of time.
At a gated community.
In a gated community.
Of the government's choice.
Right. They will provide him with an orange jumpsuit.
It's amazing how nice the government can be to people.
Yes.
Just giving them this living establishment. Most people have to pay to stay somewhere, and they're doing it for free.
Isn't that nice?
It's a really kind and thoughtful gesture by the government.
But if you'd like to give us a call and ask us any questions or make any comments, the telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. You said something a minute ago.
I said
more than one thing, actually. There's only one thing that was that I am.
That's okay.
About
I couldn't hear
about.
What I was saying because of these head because of
can
the noise.
Can you understand what I'm saying?
Barely.
Okay. I can understand. You might want to switch the plug that you're on. I think you're.
Yeah.
The third one. So go ahead and pull that out. And what did it fix?
Keep going. Keep talking.
All right. What you were saying a minute ago about performance in the market. what we look at when we're giving advice to our clients is asset allocation, being broadly diversified in different areas of the market and having different concentrations in different areas based on what our clients want for the long term. And what I see the biggest mistake made regularly is people trying to move from one concentrated position in their portfolio to another one following the best returns of the market. And just as an example, when people are given their 401k choices at their work and they begin to choose where should I be at the 401k, there's a pattern that I see that's very clear. They look at the last best returning funds in that particular portfolio, and they say, oh, that's where I want to be. But by definition, that is going to the one that is overpriced, or at least high priced, because it's gotten such a good return. And the likelihood of getting really, really good returns in the same position that got really, really good returns last year is not very good. Knowing which place to be is the hard part. That's right. The thing that people run into the brick wall all the time. By inappropriately moving from one asset class to another, trying to chase the best returns, you wind up getting a pretty low return. So what we talk about is broad diversification, stepping back and trying not to chase. Something in the market is going to do well, and something in the market's going to do poorly. If you're spread across it, that's probably a better thing.
Did we give the telephone numbers?
We just did.
Okay.
A moment ago. Hear it because your headphones were.
Yeah. And
we can give them again.
773-1400 if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise?
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth in that. The issue of chasing performance generally doesn't work. One of the things that does work, and that's what we do, is long-term asset allocation. And it's key to recognize that it's long-term. Matter of fact, I don't know if you got that video I sent you of Harry Markowitz interviewed.
It's good stuff.
But
especially when he was agreeing with us. That part
liked. That's the point. I mean, the entire video I sent you, I think he agreed with us all the way through there.
Right. I mean, those are the parts that I really like. Anytime anybody agrees with us, like, well, yeah, so this is a very brilliant person here talking, obviously.
Harry Markowitz, by the way, is an economist who wrote a paper to get his doctorate in finance. And he wrote that in 1952. It was pretty revolutionary at the time. He got the Nobel Prize in 1991, along with a couple of other people, for, in essence, founding a completely new way of looking at investing. And for better or for worse, his methodology has worked for the past 62 years. And as a result, we have a tendency to go with things that work because, very frankly, there aren't other investment methodologies that have worked that long. Matter of fact, I am hard-pressed to find investment methodologies that work at all. But the point is that in attempting to do well in the market, and this is sort of what I was talking about earlier, we look at how asset classes have done over the last 40 years or so, and here is the standard. And when we talk about asset classes, it's important to understand that an asset class is not an industry.
It's not a sector.
For instance, in stocks, in domestic U.S. equities, as we call them, we have a series of asset classes. But to give you an example. Large cap value stocks versus large cap growth stocks. Those are two different asset classes. Large cap value stocks are very large. When I say large companies, that means that their total valuation the exchange is big.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Let's not get too complicated. Let's not try to describe the definition of the word large.
They're large, big.
Medium, and small are words that people don't use regularly.
They don't?
We don't want to get into deep jargon here. Large companies are, you know.
Well, there's large companies, there's medium-sized companies, and there's small companies. And by the way, large, medium, and small is based on the value on the exchange, the total value of all their stock. And then there's growth companies and there's value companies. The value companies, the valuation in their stock is simply because somebody's looked at the company and said, whoa, they got a lot of stuff.
Well,
that's a technical term.
Right. Well, if you're going to be explaining all the secret jargon of our industry, people are going to understand what they're doing with their investments. We have to be careful here.
I don't think there's any grave risk there.
So value companies are valued on what they own.
And growth stuff. Growth companies are valued on hope.
On what they expect their earnings might be, or what somebody might expect. I hope their earnings are.
Yeah, one is generally speaking a reality that we can pretty well pin down. The other one is a speculation of something that probably won't happen. So from that, rationally, you should probably conclude that value stocks tend to do better than growth stocks, although another guy got a Nobel Prize for figuring that out.
Yes, it seems like one of these things where people hear the word growth and they hear the word value and they think, well, growth must mean that it's going to grow. The problem is that most growth companies fail. There's some growth companies that do really, really well, and they kind of help the whole asset classes.
There's some people who win the lottery and do really, really well, too.
But taking it from a perspective of what do we do with our money, there is possibly a place for growth in a portfolio, but not in every portfolio. And we've got the engineer is in the room with us.
He's not an engineer.
He doesn't have a hammer in his hand. So.
I have very carefully observed him over an extended period of time, and I have noted that he has never had a train.
Never. Correct. He doesn't wear the right hat.
As a person who doesn't wear an engineer's hat and who doesn't have a train, he's also totally puzzled as to why my headset's not working. Yeah. But
mine is working this time around.
Is this one plugged in?
Let's see here.
We're having
technical difficulties.
I don't know if it's difficulties, but
we're definitely technical.
Yeah, we're doing something here. Well,
anyway,
no sound at all comes out of this one, so that's a distinct.
Because it's turned all the way down.
It works.
It works.
This
good
one works. That one doesn't work, and it is, for whatever it's worth, it is the plug. I have determined that is the source of problems here.
All right. Okay. So back to asset allocation. We mentioned we don't do sector or there are sectors out there. Here's a good one. This is the one that makes me laugh just about every time. I probably won't laugh for this rendition of it, but it does make me laugh often when people say, well, I'm into technology stocks.
Mm.
Kind of go, or
as if there are stocks that aren't technology
right,
stocks.
Right. The wheel is technology.
Yeah, well.
Well, I mean modern technology. Well, what company today doesn't use modern technology? I wouldn't buy a financial organization's stock if they didn't have computers sitting on all of their desks.
Well,
you don't.
Anyway, Dr. Markowitz figured out that if we use asset classes, and you look back 30 years, the best performing asset classes over the last 30 or 40 years will almost certainly be the best performing asset classes over the next 30 or 40 years. Again, this is without regard to any industry. It's totally counterintuitive. He also said that if you pick asset classes that have tended to give the smoothest ride at any given expected rate of return, there's another term.
Uh-huh.
The ones who gave the smoothest ride over the last 30 years are the ones that will give the smoothest ride over the next 30 years. And lo and behold, it has worked consistently, which is, by the way, why...
It took them a long time to give the Nobel Prize, but they gave it to
yeah,
him.
Yeah, it took them 41 years to give him the Nobel Prize because... 39 years to give him the Nobel Prize because 30 years after he wrote his paper...
It was still working.
It was still working. In other words, he said, if you look back 30 years from 1952, then the next 30 years should look like this. And lo and behold, 30 years later, it looked like that. But, you know, people still had a heck of a time believing it when they saw it. So it took him a while to determine that, you know, this is one of those things where we know he's right, but we don't like it.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot more fun to say, I'm going to invest in high-tech growth stocks, big ones, or something like that, or to think that a person can go out there and outguess the system in that way. And
very much like, and this is great, this is a good one, very much like Moneyball. A lot of our listeners know what that is.
I don't.
Moneyball is about a team, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but a team that gathered a group, a baseball team, that gathered a group of economists, three economists. And I know in the movie and in the book it talks about one, but I actually know one of the three, and so I can verify this specifically. Mm-hmm. There were three, and several of them came from Wharton, which I have some experience at Wharton.
That sounds like a mythical place.
And what they did is they laid out a plan for the recruitment of the baseball team, where instead of going out and trying to find the best hitters, which also are the ones with the highest strikeout rates, they instead looked for very balanced people that fit together very well with other balanced people to make a team that would win instead of a bunch of stars or a star that was carrying the team. And they did an amazing job. Well, they took Markowitz's idea and applied it to baseball.
And by the way, Markowitz's idea is officially called mean variance optimization. Love that term?
Yes, which is exactly what they did for baseball. They took the mean, the averages, which we've got lots of numbers on, of these baseball players, mm-hmm. and said they get a lot of base hits. Well, if we get a lot of players that get a lot of base hits, then we'll have a lot of scoring. And that's what happened. They weren't looking for home runs.
You say they all came from, several of them came from Wharton?
Yes.
Isn't that Who Saw the Who? Isn't it Wharton Saw Who? Wasn't that a movie or something?
I believe Dr. Seuss didn't use Wharton. I believe it was somebody else.
Oh, okay. I just thought maybe it was Wharton. So I thought that maybe is where the Who was seen. And the Who, of course, was a famous British
rock band.
Rock band. Yes. So maybe they were at Wharton. And anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we're being silly, which is normal. Although we have been officially informed that we're not funny.
Yes, we have been informed in no uncertain terms that we are not funny and that we should avoid trying to be humorous on the radio program.
Because it doesn't work.
Doesn't work at all.
And it obviously doesn't, because we haven't laughed at ourselves. Anyway, the...
Horton saw who, not Wharton.
They're awfully colored.
It's a W.
But the W should actually be silent.
Well, the H is silent in Wharton.
The K
in
night.
The H is silent in Wharton, but you can't get a W silent to get Horton.
Isn't it W-H-O-R-T-O-N? W-H-A-R?
Yeah.
But if you silence the W, then it becomes Horton.
Right. Well, you can silence an H, but you can't silence a W.
You can't?
I
think you can, but
you
anyway.
You can silence a K and an H.
I was going to say that over the last week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up. This is good. It was up 20.5. No, it was up 0.13.
Oh, 0.13 what?
I'm not going to say.
It was up 0.13, and
right.
There were other numbers involved somewhere.
Right.
These numbers
like,
had no meaning.
I've actually been working, this is Jeff, I've been working in radio for a really, really, really long time. And back in the 1960s.
I saw
no,
that
no
in a history book.
Or something. I was actually doing the news in the wee hours of the night, news and sports, where we actually had to tear it off, and there were basketball scores that night, and I didn't think anybody was listening, so I just gave the basketball scores without giving the teams. And then I found out suddenly that
people were listening.
There were a lot of people listening, and I got to hear from my boss the next day. And anyway.
Okay, so the market numbers are
0.13%.
1838.7, 16,458.56, and 4,197.58.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 0.13% for the week. Year to date, it's down 0.71. And for 52 weeks, it's up 20.58%.
That's
cool.
Very nice.
Which is pretty close to what everything else did, too. So basically, nothing happened in the market, so we can shut the show down. So
we've got a caller calling in to say, you guys should stop this silly business.
Yes. Well, we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. There's lots of charts and indices in the paper and in the TV and they report on the radio. How does, and it seems like they're all in America, obviously, but how much does confidence play in the market? and how can that be measured?
Okay. How much does confidence play in the market? It is a con game, I think, yeah.
Market and money, it's all about confidence. If you expect to be able to make a profit, you're more likely to make a profit if you're running a business.
There are definitely exceptions to that. There were people in the late 1990s who had absolutely no idea how they were going to make a profit.
Right.
But
people were giving them money anyway.
They had tremendous faith they were going to somehow, and they failed.
Confidence in the market as far as pricing structure has an impact in the short term. This is why we have market panics and market bubbles. Because when people get overconfident, they overbuy. And when they get underconfident, they oversell. The reality of the long-term market, though, is that profitable companies continue to do well long-term, and unprofitable companies tend to go away over the long-term.
And I'm going to give a counter to that, which I think is very important.
Uh-huh.
We've often said a bull market climbs a wall of worry. Actually, as a whole, the stock market does much better when most people have no confidence in it.
Correct.
And it tends to go to excess and promptly collapse when everyone has confidence in it. That is a almost universal truth. Now, let me back up and say something else. It all depends on what you're having confidence in. The stock market or the economy cannot exist unless we have confidence in the system.
Right. And that doesn't have anything to do with the value being created. It has to do with our confidence that we're going to be able to participate mm-hmm. in that value.
As a matter of fact, the kind of confidence that tends to drive the values in the stock market is fear and greed. When people are confident that they can be greedy and get away with it, when they can make a lot of money for nothing, when secret insiders are making lots of money somehow, they have tremendous amount of confidence in a mythology that can often be seen on MSNBC.
That's a precursor to a crash.
That's bad.
Yeah, that's. I mean, you might get a big spike out of that.
You will, generally.
But that kind of confidence is an unhealthy mm-hmm. confidence that one chip of it falling off, one blip in the market causes that confidence to collapse
shatter
completely, and everybody gets out at once.
Mr. Market, which is the mythical, hypothetical, the person who, metaphorical, that's the word I was looking for, the metaphorical person who represents the market is Mr. Market.
Is his name John?
I don't know.
Is his name John Market?
No, he's just Mr. Market.
Okay.
Mr. Market is clearly bipolar.
Yeah. Yes. When the headline says the market has decided, I think what we're talking about there is
Mr. Market.
That's Mr. Market.
Mr. Market has decided. And Mr. Market is bipolar. And when he gets off his meds, by the way, his physician is Dr. Fed.
Yes.
When he gets off his meds, he has a tendency to do very poorly.
Even when he's on his meds, sometimes he can do poorly. Sometimes he can do great when he needs meds.
Right. So, as far as confidence is concerned, there's a lot of confidence is like risk. There are a lot of definitions, and there's a lot of aspects to it, and we have to look at all of them. We have to have a great deal of confidence in the system, meaning our socioeconomic system. We have to have confidence in the integrity of the trading institutions. We have to have confidence in whoever is giving us advice. Unfortunately, in many cases, our confidence is misplaced. And when we discover that, we tend to get very, very unhappy. We tend to lose confidence. And also, unfortunately, when we have high confidence, we trust everybody. And when we have low confidence, we have a tendency to trust nobody.
Right. And when you have very high confidence, all it takes is one of the people that you trust, or even one event that you trusted was going to be one way going the other, for you to lose all confidence, which is what happens with, you know, irrational exuberance. It's a great statement. By the way, that statement, which was used by Alan Greenspan, came from a book written by Dr. Shiller, who's just recently won the Nobel Prize. And he's mm-hmm. got some really good stuff in there on behavioral finance. It's basically what he's saying is that our behavior, our confidences, as long as we have some doubt and we say, we expect to have a good return, but it may not happen. That's a healthy environment. As soon as we say, we expect to have a good return and we're not going to have a bad return, as soon as we have some sign of a bad return, our confidence shatters. So that question, while it seems like it's a very simple one, is actually one of the deepest thought-provoking conversations for psychologists and economists of the day. Nobel Prizes are given out by trying to determine what level of confidence in the market is healthy, because you have to have some level of confidence that you can expect some kind of return over a long period of time. Otherwise, you won't invest at all. But as soon as you get too much confidence, all it takes is, it goes back to this. How many times have you heard this in the office? I don't care how much risk I take as long as I don't lose any money. How many times have you heard that one?
More often than I'd like to think about.
Yeah. So that concept of I don't care how much risk I'm taking as long as I don't lose money, if I say that and I kind of call your attention to that statement, most of you out there are going, well, that doesn't make sense. Risk is all about possibility of losing money. That's what risk is in the market.
If I could correct you on something.
Which that?
Robert Shiller used the term in 2000.
Uh-huh.
Alan Greenspan said it in 1996, but Alan Greenspan got it from somebody else. Did he get it from Shiller?
Yeah, he got it from Shiller. Shiller wrote the book after it.
He wrote it in 2000.
Right.
Yeah.
He wrote the book in 2000, but he had a statement that he wrote to the Fed about irrational exuberance, and then Alan Greenspan used it later. And then Shiller wrote a book called Irrational Exuberance because it became so popular as a term.
That's one of those things that we do, by the way, is we find some nitpicky little thing like that, and we have a tendency to dig into it for probably an excessive period of time until we finally figure it out.
Let's step away from the market a minute and just go to... Yes, let's go to our day-to-day lives. If you're convinced that the first day of your vacation is going to be amazing and there is no way anything can go wrong, the likelihood is it's going to be a miserable day. Because all it takes is one minor thing going wrong to shatter that mood. If, on the other hand, you go into it saying, things are going to happen and I'm going to have fun anyway, you get a very different result. And that's pure psychology, but that's what the market is. It's just a bunch of us all coming together and saying, we're going to have a good time, and we expect to have some problems in the process. That's healthy. As soon as we say we're going to have a good time, and as soon as the party starts going south, I'm out of here, that's bad for everybody. If you're not truly invested, and by that I mean the same way that you're invested in a marriage or invested in a relationship, then it's unhealthy. If you have no confidence in your invested relationship with a spouse, then it's probably not going to go well. If you have too much confidence in it, it's probably not going to go well. If you have a good degree of confidence and a good degree of understanding that there are going to be issues, you're going to have a great, great relationship.
Well, I have a good degree of confidence that we have some commercials to play.
Oh, yes, we do have commercials.
And that Town Square Media would like us to play the commercials so that they can pay the electric bill to run the transmitter.
And buy sneeze guards and get a new surge suppressor for us.
No. That's expecting entirely too much. We're going to be back on the other side of these commercials with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd like to give us a call on the other side, the telephone numbers locally in the area is 254 area code. 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
You know,
we have found a historical inaccuracy that may lead to great diatribes on our program.
Really?
Yes. We were talking about the words irrational exuberance, and you said, did he say it? Did Alan Greenspan say it? Did Robert Shiller say it? And you looked at Robert Shiller's website, and Robert Shiller's website said Alan Greenspan definitely said it first. However, there was an interview that took place the day after Alan Greenspan's speech that coined the phrase irrational exuberance. It was an interview by Think Tank, which is the name of a blog, and the guy that was doing the interview was Macroman, and he interviewed Robert Shiller. And he, Robert Shiller, had spoken with Alan Greenspan the day before that famous speech, and during the meeting, Greenspan, this is according to the interview that took place the day after the speech, Greenspan had asked him something, and the professor answered maybe it was just irrational exuberance among investors. So Robert Shiller, in the day after the speech, said that he was the one that said it first, and now on his website site says, no, absolutely, Alan Greenspan said it first.
Yeah, in the second edition, he said Alan Greenspan said it first.
Now, anyway, I've got the second edition. It's just,
you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone number's in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Carlton the Doorman.
You're caught funny. In the doorman?
This is Carlton the Doorman.
Ah,
Carlton the Doorman.
You're funny.
Oh,
you're killing me over here.
Did you mean to put the word looking at the end of that? Are you funny looking?
Hey, Jeff.
Yes.
It's Neil Trent.
Oh, Carlton the doorman. I thought so. Yeah, that makes perfectly good sense.
I hung out at Ace Hardware in the plumbing section all day the other day just to see you and tell you you're funny. And then you keep saying, we're not funny.
Well, we have anecdotal evidence on voicemail saying that we are not humorous.
Yeah, I heard.
Yeah,
that.
We actually think that's humorous, and so we keep referring back to it because.
And the people at the office play that recording
for
us.
Every time that we think we're funny.
Anytime,
you know?
Our ego gets boosted a little too high, they play the recording of "We Are Not Funny," and yeah, they love the show, but we are not funny.
I like that. I think, and it makes perfectly
good
sense.
It's quite nice.
I'll send you a postcard too, just to.
Well, that's good.
Hey,
what I was really calling about, and I'll get off pretty quick and give your other listener a chance to call in.
I think he's taking a break this week.
Yes.
Oh, he's on vacation?
Yeah. It could be, right. He called in earlier.
Jake, you were spot on just a few minutes ago in the last segment. I think what it comes with the psychology thing, and I've dabbled in that a little bit in my life, but
yes, doctor.
I think the thing it comes down to is that there's a kind of a cognitive sloppiness that all of us are probably vulnerable to.
Yes, yes.
What happens is when we get affective about things, we tend to confuse the word possibility with probability.
No, certainty.
Causation, correlation, no biggie.
Yeah, but I think you were spot on with that. The other thing I called about, though, is that, and I will get off after this, a few months ago, Jeff, you and I had a really interesting discussion about annuities, and that made a lot of difference when I retired, and I was just wondering, you might want to share that. Because I almost fell into that trap before we sat down and talked. I think it was probably back in the summer. But I think that would merit talking about if you have time. And
okay.
Because I've had a couple.
I had a call yesterday about the same. I probably get a call every couple of days on that issue.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I've had a few people ask me about that, and I passed on my realization to them. But you probably have more than one listener. So if you covered that again today, I think it would be
okay.
Probably pretty pertinent. And that's
sounds
about
like
all
winner.
I got over
okay.
to tell you. Yeah,
okay.
You guys are funny. You're killing me.
Well, it's always nice to know that the
murderous intent
that a Walmart doorman, Carlton the doorman, is handling that well. How do you like your new role, your new job?
You mean unemployed?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I love it.
I'm
standing here at my gun bench working on a gun right now.
Congratulations.
See, you're one of those masses of people who've given up looking for work.
Well, I never really tried too hard.
Yeah, well, you're a dropout from the workforce. You are a statistic, sir.
Well, I'll tell you, as you know, I retired on the 1st of September, and I mentally said to myself, I'll wait until after Christmas and maybe go back and do something part-time. But I abandoned that idea about October. So
this is
great.
Too much fun.
I just wanted you to know that you are a datum point.
A datum point.
Well, not data point, because data is plural.
I think you should go to Decatur, Texas. Once you get there, you will be a data point indicator.
Right.
Whoa, that's what I've always
indicate. You'll be indicator. You'll be a datum point indicator.
There you go.
I have aspired to that all my life. I was about to give up the will to live, and you just gave me
And as soon as you arrive there, as you approach there, you'll be a leading indicator.
Ooh, I like that even better.
And as you leave, you'll be a lagging indicator.
Whoa. Well, you know, I'm about to get obscene, so.
Take care.
Hang out, but
okay.
Hey, appreciate your show, partner. Thanks an awful
Bye-bye.
Lot.
Bye-bye. Yeah. And
we do have some more commercials.
We have some more commercials. I will, in honor of Dr. Trent, I will make my short spiel about annuities. There's a real tendency of people in times of uncertainty to want certainty when it does not exist. The problem with getting any return above that you could get by putting your money in either a certificate of deposit insured by the FDIC or a similar maturity date treasury security, and you're going to find those are very close numbers normally.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem with that is that as you increase the return or you increase the length of time you expect to get the return, you increase risk.
Amazing.
And people don't believe that. People believe there's some secret way of avoiding that. So they do something like, and I'll give you an example. Instead of putting their money into a diversified portfolio of investments and using an investment advisory firm, we happen to be one of those, they instead go to an insurance company and buy a fixed annuity.
Or any other kind of annuity.
We're not talking about the variable, but the fixed or indexed or something annuity where the company, you won't see any fluctuations in value, they promise you, and you have a promise of a return over a long period of time.
A guarantee, even.
Right.
Stamped on there saying guaranteed by the company.
Which also, it applies to other things like alternative investments. The problem with that is the insurance company is going to go turn around and invest that money into the market.
That's how they do it.
And they're going to give you a fixed amount of money. But as soon as you buy an annuity, as soon as you purchase an annuity at a fixed rate, or an indexed rate, anything other than a variable annuity. Variable annuity is a separate animal. But we're talking about a fixed annuity or an indexed annuity or something similar where there's a guarantee on it. As soon as you get that guarantee, you have turned your money over. It's no longer your money. It now belongs to the insurance company. If the insurance company goes under, your money goes with it.
And you become an
unsecured creditor of that company.
Now, there may be a state pool of money collected from other insurance companies
help. Or there may not be.
Or there may not be.
And you don't know, by the way, because you will only find out if the state guarantee fund has any relevance to your situation when the company officially is declared gone.
Insolvent, right.
Well, no, they go insolvent first. For instance, executive
life. When it's gone completely.
Executive life of California took 30 years. From the time it was declared insolvent until it was finally in bankruptcy court, Executive Life of New York, rather, until finally in bankruptcy court they said, okay, we're going to liquidate the company. When they said we're going to liquidate the company, if you happened to be in Texas at that point, you got 30 cents on the dollar that you had invested back in the 1970s.
Which, if you account for inflation,
that's not much.
Yeah, I think you maybe
like
paid. $3. You paid to be there.
You got $3 out of 100. The problem is you have just invested all of your money with no government backing, with no real serious regulatory oversight into a single company, all of your money, and you hope they'll pay you back because you were trying to avoid risk.
And they gave you a guarantee.
Yes, but the guarantee is no better than the same thing, by the way, we need to get to commercials, but I want to tell you, the same thing is true in most alternative investments. Non-traded investments, almost without exception, are called alternative investments, as they're called, which, quote, stabilize a portfolio, end quote,
Yikes.
Are stable because they don't trade on the market. They're not liquid. They're not transparent. And as a result, you don't see the value fluctuations
Because they're using the same price either that you purchased with an assumption of growth, but the assumption is the key point
there. And you really won't know that they don't have any money anymore until you try to get your money out. Anyway, we've got a break for some more commercials. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the same or maybe something different. Do we? And we're back with another couple of minutes of the Personal Wealth Coach for the first hour this January 18th, 2014. Well, of course, next hour, hopefully, we'll be back to bore you to tears one more time if you dare to listen to us that long. We only got about a minute and a half left. What are we going to do with a minute and a half?
We can count seconds. That would not be very fun, though.
Speaking of irrational exuberance, and I'll go into this next hour a little bit, but I was listening to a discussion about irrational behavior, and there's a nice confirmation in this article that I actually was listening to on the radio, and I'm going to look it up and do more detailed research on it, but basically says people are irrational almost all the time. And that was something that I think most of us would be a little bit shocked to think that our thinking is most of the time irrational, and it's because we're lazy.
Yep.
And we quickly make it's the fast thinking, slow thinking thing that you were
Daniel Kahneman wrote a book, Thinking Fast and Slow.
And the point is, when we think fast, which we do, we shoot from the hip, we make a quick estimate of something, we discover it's generally untrue. But you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we are indeed an investment advisory firm, and we have the ability to come back next hour with more of the same stuff, and then we'll be back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.
Your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.